Welcome to this Joy 94.9 podcast.
We want to hear from you.
It's time for our listener survey. So head to the Joy website and let us know what you love about the station and your presenters.
Maybe you'd like to share your thoughts on Joy's program production team, the volunteers behind Joy Podcasts.
The results of this survey will assist us in continuing to be the best possible station we can be.
Head to joy.org.au and have your say. Joy 94.9, your voice, your radio station.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday 10 till 12.
He is the newly minted member for Goldstein.
Goldstein.
And his name is Tim Wilson. He joins us on the phone. Tim, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very, very good. Notice we got the name right. Goldstein.
That's right. Well done. Snaps to both of you, gentlemen.
I do prefer Goldstein.
We're just going to have to agree to disagree.
Depends on which side of St Kilda Road you come from.
Exactly. I was going to say, what side of Swanston Street you're brought up on. Tim, we wanted to talk, first of all, a lot of inaugural speeches this week. We have spoken to you previously about your own. What's it like sitting in the Parliament? We saw the effect that your own inaugural or first speech had on you, and there was a lot of emotion around your relationship and your fiancée, and that became quite apparent to the general public that there is something rather deep and profound there. What's it like sitting in the chamber and watching the speeches of others?
It's an incredible experience, actually, because it's one of those times that you see people and they're very candid and honest, and you get an insight into them as an individual. And particularly in a building like Parliament House, where, I'll be frank, one of the things I've learned is there's not much empathy around the place. You then see somebody like Julian Leeser, and if you haven't seen Julian Leeser's maiden speech,
it's beautiful.
Inaugural speech, Google it and read it, but make sure you have a tissue, because
yes.
He talks about when he was told by his mother that his dad had committed suicide and how that's led him to be, engaged in mental health and, people opening themselves up to the world.
One of the things, and of course the tradition of your first speech is, there's a bit of a time limit. I think Darren might have broken that in the Senate, but pretty much it is a personal reflection more than anything, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, somebody gave me a very good bit of advice, which is inaugural speech has to be a speech that only you can deliver.
Right.
It has to be a reflection of you and people to get insight and a window into you. And so what motivates you, what drives you, what's the experience that's taken you to be where you are today? And everyone has their own unique journey. And that's why people often bear their soul, and you get a measure of the individual, which guides you to how you should really look at them when they're sitting there in Parliament.
I just got one quick question. TASS has got a whole list of them here, of course, but whose offices are either side of you?
I don't have anybody on one side, and the other side, because it's a corridor, and the other side is Julia Banks, the member for Chisholm.
Right, cool.
They haven't popped any of the toilets or anything, have they?
Does that mean you're in the corner office then, Tim?
Sorry, it's not a corner office. It's I guess it technically is, but there's no sort of corner view because you look straight onto a corridor. So plaster on two sides.
At least you can see who's coming towards you.
Well, maybe.
And what they're carrying.
The offices in Parliament House, most people won't notice, but you have basically an area where your staff work,
an outer office,
and
an inner
office. The member is, and then you have a sort of antechamber. And there's a corridor to go to the bathroom, but the corridor to go to the bathroom also has a door to the actual corridor, so you can actually slip out in and out of your office without people seeing. So there you go, something you've learned today.
Lovely. So, Tim, I have read your speech, and I did see a fair bit of coverage on your speech as well, which was very, very positive, I thought. You did say, though, that when the Coalition had initially announced that there would be a plebiscite, that you initially crawled into a ball and cried. What brought that on for you? Why was that the case?
Well, that wasn't over. That wasn't in my inaugural speech, but I wrote about that in.
Oh yes, you did. I apologise. You did too.
No, that's all right. And the reason I wrote about that was to explain to people that while I've always said the plebiscite isn't my first preference, that I do think it genuinely is very important to be had, because it gives us the opportunity to deal with this issue and resolve it and bring the country together. But also to communicate that I understand people's sense of anguish and anxiety, because I've had it myself. And, you know, I just thought we were so close and then it was held off. And then in terms of dealing with in the parliament, and there was a calling for of a plebiscite. And I have the same sort of emotion now where the LGBTI community is turning around and saying, this isn't worth fighting for. And I actually just completely disagree. I know people don't like plebiscite. It's not my first preference either. But when I think about the idea that we logically think we can sit back and wait for our rights to be delivered on a silver platter, I question whether people really do want this reform and whether they're prepared to fight for the type of country we should want to be.
Tim, I don't think that you can say that the LGBTI community is not prepared to fight for marriage equality. That's what the communities have been doing now
for at
least a dozen years, if not longer. I think what the communities are saying is that they actually don't want to have their public lives publicly debated and have their families, their friends, their colleagues talk about essentially what will be their sexuality.
Yeah, and I understand that, but that's, as far as that's happening already, that's in many ways what the push for a change in law has always been about. It's about building a bridge and understanding and empathy that people are in relationships that are equal to others. And if you don't want to have that conversation, then we should never have embarked on this path. I know that I don't like the idea of it either, but
the conversation's been had for the last dozen years, as we've just already said. So it's not like we're shying away from it. The conversation.
No, exactly. So why are we suddenly so afraid to make the case so strongly? And why do we believe that the case can't be won? Irrespective of my partisan leanings, one of the things that's disturbed me most in the past couple of weeks is when particularly Bill Shorten got up and started talking about how we could lose this vote. And what that sends a message to, I think, the Australian public is, one, not only that we don't trust them to vote the right way, but that we don't have confidence within ourselves anymore that we can win this. And I think that's deeply disturbing, and we have to steer away from that. This is worth fighting for. It's worth standing up for. And we should do it.
I want to repeat Tass's point. There are a great many people that are going to put themselves in the firing line, and we've seen there's already out this morning George Christensen likening the age of consent being lowered in Queensland to equal that of heterosexual people as endorsing paedophilia. I listened to a talkback caller on a radio station that you talked to on occasion on 774 with Raf the other day, where we were called perverse, abnormal, and they've dragged out the old abomination. I don't want to see young kids have to go through that. We're older and tougher. There's young kids who are going to be so extremely damaged, and we can't allow that to be the public discourse. It's not civilised. It's vile.
I agree with you? It's not civilised. It's vile. But as you've just highlighted, one, this is happening already, and it won't change unless people are shown that when the Australian people had a chance to come together and stand up for the type of country we want to be and set a tone for a better country, they took it. Otherwise, this stuff will just keep perpetuating, and for the next three, and we can't assume inevitability on it, 3, 6, 9 years, they'll say. And this must be the first time in human history where a group of people were fighting for their rights and they had a window and they said, actually, we're going to let it go, and we're hoping for something better in the future.
Yeah, Tim, I'm going to have to disagree with your analysis. We've got to go to a break. Stay with us.
We didn't hang up on Tim, but we've got him. We've got him back.
I might have done it accidentally. I'm sorry, Tim. I hit a button.
Believe me, if we didn't want you on the show, mate,
we wouldn't have you. But we really do want you on the show.
No, that's all right. I think you guys like a bit of robust talk on a Saturday morning.
Of course, why not? We do, don't we all?
Anything on a Saturday that's robust is good.
It's Joy's version of Grumpy Old Men.
Tim, we've had quite a few messages about this morning as well, but it's been reported in the media that one of your colleagues in the other place, in the Senate, Dean Smith, is actually prepared to cross the floor on this very issue.
That's not actually true. He hasn't said that. What he said is that he may choose to abstain because he has a philosophical...
Or cross the floor.
To plebiscite. No, he hasn't. He won't be crossing the floor. I've spoken to him about this.
Okay. Is this something that you would be prepared to consider?
In short, no. And there's a very serious reason why, which is that I went to an election honouring my commitment to constituents that I would vote for a plebiscite. And I get a lot of emails from people telling me, you should cross the floor, you should do this, you should block the plebiscite. Yeah, I'm somebody who believes very strongly in integrity in public life. And this isn't actually about me. It's about what I took to the election and honouring my constituents. And so I will be voting for it.
Is this a little bit like the government honouring its policy commitments?
Yes, and if you're going to go to some cute point about superannuation, we have honoured that policy commitment because we actually put forward the policy. It's been refined, but we have changed the fundamental.
Refined. Let's refine the equal marriage situation.
No. A refinement of the plebiscite is to change different aspects of the bill, but not the central thrust. And I've seen a lot of people make this seemingly cute point, but it's just misleading and dishonest. You know, there will always be fine-tuning in any implementation of law, but the central thrust is not the same thing.
With due respect, Tim, I mean, the changes to the superannuation are not fine-tuning. They are wholesale changes that have a massive impact on the bottom line of the nation's budget.
On what was ironclad policy, according to the Prime Minister, and the interesting... choice of words from both the Treasurer Scott Morrison and from your colleague Kelly O'Dwyer was that they were policy directions and not in fact policies that were allegedly ironclad. It all gets a bit confusing, Tim.
Let me just address that, which is it's actually better policy. Like it's.
The one you went with was a bad policy, was it?
No, this is,
but we could argue that about your plebiscite policy.
Gentlemen, please. The actual superannuation policy that is going to be introduced is actually better. It doesn't mean the other one was bad, but I did have concerns with it and I raised it, and I equally had concerns about aspects of the plebiscite policy, and I've raised those as well.
Okay. We've got... I want to say one thing. You know, you say that it's about people... It's about, you know, trusting the Australian people. You know who I don't trust, mate? I don't trust the Australian Christian lobby, who've already said... that the funding they'll get, they will use for other things than the question of marriage equality. I don't trust George Christensen. I don't trust Corey Bernardi. I don't trust Erica Betts, right? Because overwhelmingly, the people, and I'm excluding you from this, the people who support a plebiscite are the ones that don't bloody want marriage equality. And that says to me, this is a stitch-up.
Can I clarify, this is one of the things that's been lost in translation and where people like me have had a big influence, which is that the money that will be used on the plebiscite for the different campaigns actually has to pass certain committees to establish how it can be used, so it can't be used to mislead, to be deceptive or dishonest. It has to meet the ordinary government advertising expenditure guidelines.
Well, that's hardly a high bar, mate.
The public money, Tim. The money raised elsewhere can be used for political advertising, which means that there's a whole lot of vitriol and hatred can be spewed, not with the public money, but with money raised.
But that can be done right now. Yeah. I understand your point, but... the public money, which is the only thing that we can control, will only be used for things that meet ordinary government guidelines to make sure that they're accurate, not misleading. People can raise money for whatever they want currently in this campaign and after this campaign to say whatever they want. And so the constant feeding of doubt about it by finding every single angle rather than saying, do we actually want to achieve this change in law? And do we have the confidence that we can make the case successfully or not?
And roll over innocent people in the meantime. I don't think so, Tim.
Now, what's rolling over in the meantime is we are saying we're prepared to put this off. There are people who are in relationships who want to get married where partners die and everything else in the meantime. And we're saying it's okay, they don't matter in it. And you know as I know, and you've highlighted many examples today, that groups like the ACL will still keep arguing their case. So I just think it's grossly irresponsible when you have a window not to take it.
Okay. As a taxpayer, and I'll say this, in the top 10% of taxpayers, I object strenuously, right? This plebiscite with the funding and everything is going to cost $200 million, right? My share of that...
170, actually.
Well, you know, government estimates are always good.
Wrong, yeah.
Right? $200 million, I know what my share of that is going to be as a taxpayer. And you know what? I don't enjoy paying $1,000 or $1,200 to be attacked by people like your colleague, George Christensen, Corey Bernardi, Erica Betts, and all these others. The Parliament must decide this, Tim. That was your position previously. It was the Prime Minister's position previously. The plebiscite, you know, we can have an argument about whether the Australian people can make a decision. The Australian Parliament should not abrogate its responsibility. We've never had a plebiscite on euthanasia, on abortion, on going to war, right? We had a couple on conscription. Well, that went well. The Parliament must decide this. You know that in your heart.
No. But with respect, Macca, I don't know it in my heart. I have got up and said that continuously. That is my view. But it is, as the PM has said before, this isn't a dictatorship. You don't always win everything you want. And part of the challenge is you've got to compromise in politics. If we just stick to highfalutin principles all the time without any recognition of the fact that other people have a different view, you get nothing done. And that's why I continue to say, and I very strongly feel it, it is grossly irresponsible to say we have a pathway, but we're going to turn around and say this isn't worth fighting for. We can sit back and wait.
It is worth fighting for, and please, Tim, with respect, don't call us grossly irresponsible. We care.
I'm not calling you gross.
We care as much as you do about this issue, and the younger members of our community that haven't experienced the fights and the aggravation and the hate that we've experienced.
Yes.
Right? They don't deserve to have to go through this. They really don't. But I respect you have a view. I'm going to let Pete say something because I'm...
Mac needs a cup of tea. Tim, I want to remind you of a direct quote of the words of John Howard, then Prime Minister, when he was proposing amendments to the Marriage Act in 2004. And I'm quoting directly, "The definition of marriage is something that should rest in the hands of the Parliament of the nation." That's the quote. "The definition of marriage is something that should rest in the hands of the Parliament of the nation." John Howard, 2004, when he was amending the Marriage Act. So my very last question is, why should it be handed to the members of the community, the same people that put Pauline Hanson into the Parliament? And secondly, why should our taxpayer funds go to church organisations and fund church organisations to have a no vote when church organisations are technically not entities because they don't pay tax?
For starters, my view is that the Parliament should deal with this, but the Parliament has decided to deal, may decide to deal with this through the form of a plebiscite. I've made my view on the fact
well,
that...
Well, not the Parliament, the Liberal Party, actually.
Yes.
Well, yeah, but the point is that the Liberal Party was elected to government, therefore it is the party that forms government and sets the agenda. And let's be frank, the Labor Party and the Greens ran very hard against this in the election and they lost, and it was central to their campaigns. And in terms of the answer to your question about church entities, they will not be given money by the taxpayer.
Yes, they will. $7.5 million to the no vote, which is being led by the Australian Christian lobby and church groups. You can't. That's the barefaced
to
lie.
To discriminate.
No. But respectfully, that is completely false.
What it's not false. $7.5 million announced for the no vote.
Look, would you please listen to the answer? One of the things that people like me have done and stressed very strongly and got in the proposal is that there will be a committee set up appointed by the Attorney General and the Special Minister for the State, which will be responsible for deciding how the money will be spent and then have to meet all the strict guidelines. It's not going to be handed over to churches. That is not true, and you should not be repeating something that is deeply misleading.
Well, let's see who's on the committee, Tim, when George appoints it, assuming he's going to consult with someone about it, other than, you know, perhaps George Christensen. But let's see who they appoint, and let's see what rules they have. I think we'll be right, and unfortunately, I think in this you'll be wrong. I think in terms of how that money is dispersed, yep. I think our fears will be realised, and I think you're going to be a very disappointed man.
I disagree, but we will respectfully disagree.
Yes, and we'll see how it all unfolds.
And despite this, we love having you on. We've had we've had a lot of messages. Appreciate, you know, you stick by your guns. Don't always agree, but good on you. We like it.
That's all right. You guys have a great day.
Thank you very much.
That is Tim Wilson. Bye. He is the member for Goldstein in
Stein
in the federal government. I knew I'd cock that up.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.